everyone, and welcome to the Creation Podcast, where we discuss the science that confirms Scripture. I'm your host, Renee, and you're listening to the fourth episode in a series called The Failures of Old Earth Creationism. This series was voted on by our members and patrons on YouTube and Patreon, so if you want to be involved in crafting future series, we encourage you to click the link in the description to become a member or patron yourself. Many Christians try to fit old earth ideology into their beliefs, adopting uniformitarian or evolutionary ideas into their worldview. However, this leads to major issues logically, scientifically, and theologically. Proponents of biological evolution claim that creatures are evolving upward over millions of years, becoming better and more fit to survive with each successive generation through the accumulation of beneficial mutations. However, even the most cursory dive into genetics shows something entirely different. In fact, the accumulation of mutations is detrimental and also causes major problems with the concept of biologically long ages. How do we know? Joining me today to explore the genetic evidence is ICR geneticist Dr. Jeff Tompkins. Dr. Tompkins, welcome to the podcast.
It's great to be here.
Awesome. Well, according to evolutionary belief, mutations cause genetic variation within a population by providing the material for natural selection to act upon. Of course, there are many issues with this, but to start off, I'd love to define the term mutations. What are they exactly, and what role do they play in genetics?
Well, you know, there's two different types of variation in the genome. So there's the variation that was created in Adam and Eve at the beginning. And there's also mutations that have crept in over time. And mutations come about when DNA is being replicated, and then errors can creep in there during that process. But there's also mechanisms in the genome that scan for those errors and actually fix them as well. So mutations are somewhat rare, but they're never really helpful or beneficial.
Okay. So in this series, as you know, we're talking about the failures of old earth creationism.
Right.
And at ICR, we hold to an entirely different view from old earth creationists and evolutionists, of course. But I'd love to do an overview of the OEC standpoint or the uniformitarian standpoint of mutations. What do they believe?
Well, evolutionists, they have created a system that they call a molecular clock. And so they'll look at genes across different creatures, but they calibrate those clocks with deep evolutionary time. They don't use empirical methods to calibrate those clocks. So an empirical method would be, how fast does a population grow? What's the average age of a generation within that population? That would be empirical. And we'll talk about later about studies that have been done using empirical methodology, where they've actually come up with a very young age for the Earth based on empirical genetic clocks. But evolutionists typically calibrate their molecular clocks with deep time. That different genes will give different times or different rates. And in fact, that can not only occur between different kinds of creatures, but that can also occur within the same organism. So you can look at different genes within the same organism and get different rates, different molecular clocks. And so it's not a very consistent, accurate way to measure, you know, a real molecular clock, which would be an empirically derived one based on population size, ages of the people in the populations, you know, what constitutes a generation, and that type of thing.
So they're inserting these long ages that, of course, aren't proven genetically, biologically, in any way, shape, or form. And so would you say that basically, the evolutionary standpoint is that mutations are causing the variety of traits in organisms?
No. Variety of traits in organisms are not caused by mutations.
Okay.
They're caused by the natural variation that was built in in the creation of that creature back in the creation week.
Yeah. And so how does this then impact as far as, you know, the old Earth versus the young Earth interpretation? What do young Earth creationists believe? What would you say is our view here at ICR of these mutations?
Well, let's talk about some of the data that secular evolutionary scientists have uncovered. So a paper was published in Science, which is one of the top-tier journals. And this researcher looked at mitochondrial DNA, and that is a circular piece of DNA that is outside the nucleus in the mitochondria. It's about 15,000 bases long. And you inherit that maternally from your mother. And so it's a very accurate piece of DNA to study as a molecular clock. And so this scientist actually looked at thousands of human mitochondrial DNA genomes, and he looked at the variation in those genomes based on mutations. And he determined that the mitochondrial Eve, the original, you know, woman ancestor, human ancestor, was only about 6,000 to 7,000 years old. And so, and of course, it caused an uproar in the evolutionary community. You know, the colleagues of this guy were all upset, sending editorials in and things. So, but that was one of the early studies. Then in 2012, there were two different studies done where researchers sequenced thousands of human exomes. So an exome is the protein coding region of a gene. So you have exons and introns in genes. So genes are kind of in pieces. So you'll have an exon, and then you'll have an intron, which doesn't code for protein, and then you'll have another exon. And some genes can have many exons in them. But the code in the exons is what ends up in the messenger RNA, the RNA that's copied from that gene after it's processed and all the introns are removed. So you can sequence messenger RNAs from, you know, thousands of humans across the world. We have that technology now. And so they did that. One paper, they sequenced over 2,000 humans, and another one over 4,000 humans. And so they looked at the mutations in these protein-coding regions, and over 80% of the mutations were harmful. They were connected to diabetes and heart disease and cancer and things like that. So most of the mutations they looked at were harmful. So these are real mutations that actually occurred, probably during the process of DNA replication. But one of the interesting things they did not use deep evolutionary time to calibrate the molecular clocks in this data. So they actually used empirical data, you know, how fast populations grow, the generation time of people in these populations. And what they found out is that human variation dated back to about 5,000 to 10,000 years ago. Both of these papers came up with the same analysis.
Wow. And these are secular papers.
Are secular papers. One of these papers, I think, was published in Science, the other in Nature. So those are the top two secular journals in the world. Mm-hmm. And so when I read those papers, I about fell out of my chair because you know, the original creation was 6,000 years ago based on the genealogies in the Bible. So mm-hmm. I thought that was really amazing. So those are all secular evolutionary papers that actually prove our point as biblical young earth creationists.
Mm, wow, that is so neat. And it blows my mind how, I mean, whenever you take the initial, I guess, preconceived notion of evolution out of the picture and you look at the scientific empirical evidence, it comes out with, as we would expect, numbers that are consistent with the Bible's historical record.
Exactly, exactly. And so I think that's really exciting.
That is so cool.
And so creationists have also done this type of work. There was a guy, his name's Robert Carter. He did some work on the mitochondrial Eve genome and actually published his work in a secular journal. And he found out that it was only about 200 generations back to the original Eve, which is about 6,000 years. Mm-hmm. And so another creation scientist, Nathaniel Jeanson, who actually got his PhD at Harvard, he worked here at ICR for us for a number of years. Then he went to Answers in Genesis. And he looked at the mitochondrial genomes in nematodes, which is a type of a worm, it's called a roundworm, mm-hmm. and water flea, and humans. And so he had three entirely different kinds of creatures, and he got the same results, creation date about 6,000 to 10,000 years ago. So I thought that was really great too. And Robert Carter also, the guy I mentioned previously who did mitochondrial DNA research, actually looked at the Y chromosome in humans. And so the Y chromosome is what determines masculinity, whether it's going to be a boy. And so females do not have a Y chromosome. They have two X chromosomes, and males have an X and a Y. So the Y chromosome is very interesting. It's very stable. It doesn't recombine with other chromosomes, a little bit with the X chromosome, but not much. So it's kind of like the mitochondrial DNA. It's the perfect chromosome to look at because it's not recombining with other chromosomes. So Robert Carter found out the same thing about 200 generations ago, was the first male atom. And he determined that was about 6,000 years ago as well. So all of this creationist research on molecular clocks using empirical methods to calibrate the clocks is lining up with the secular scientists who discovered, you know, the same thing.
Mm. So if there are all these studies coming out about, you know, the genetic clocks being, you know, only 6,000, 10,000 years old at max, how are evolutionists responding to this? How do they, I guess, defend their worldview, seeing the evidence in front of them?
Yeah, I don't recall seeing a whole lot of responses to those 2012 papers, those two papers. It's not that there weren't any, but I don't know. In one of the papers, they claim that human variation flatlined before it began, the mutations began ramping up. So that doesn't make any sense.
Wow.
So, you know, how can the human mutation rate just flatline for 100,000 years?
Yeah.
Evolutionists think that the first human came out of Africa about 100,000 to 200,000 years ago. So the people in these studies basically said, oh, well, human variation didn't exist, or it flatlined from about 5,000 to 10,000 years ago up to about 100,000 to 200,000 years ago. So that doesn't make any sense.
So what I'm hearing is there's strong evidence for very recent creation genetically, and no evidence whatsoever, not even a response for the hundreds of thousands of years that supposedly took to craft humans.
Yeah, I don't recall, you know, seeing any responses to those two studies by evolutionists.
Yeah.
I think they were just largely kind of ignored and just, you know, breezed over, and the evolutionary biologists just kept on doing their own thing. What's interesting is those studies were actually done by people in the medical field, because they were trying to look at things like human disease, cancer, heart disease, lung disease, you know, these kind of things. And they had a different perspective than, say, a theoretical evolutionist would have.
Gotcha. Wow. Well, that is so interesting. And so we know, of course, mutations exist. They're real. In this fallen world, we see them in creatures. But do they happen in all living things? And I mean, how many mutations would a person normally have on average, would you say?
Yeah, on average, humans per generation have about 75 to 150 mutations. And the reason we know this is because geneticists have looked at large families like, you know, Amish families, Mormon families, where you've got multiple generations, lots of kids, you know, looking at the great-grandparents, the grandparents, the parents, the children. And so you can get multiple generations of people that are all genetically related, and you can see how many mutations develop per generation.
Wow. And so are they across the board in all living things as well, like animals and plants and whatnot?
No, plants, different kinds of plants, different kinds of animals have different mutation rates in them. And so, and you know, one thing to remember too is that the genome is constantly being scanned by repair machinery. So this repair machinery is looking for errors, looking for mistakes, and then correcting them. It's amazing the design that's in living creatures. If it wasn't for all those repair mechanisms, you know, we wouldn't be alive.
Yeah, and I love the term you use, repair machinery.
Right.
I mean, if that doesn't sound engineered, I don't know what does. And
yeah.
So how cool that our creator purposefully designed us with that machinery that we can't even see or begin to comprehend as
right.
It's, you know, fixing our genomes along the way.
Yeah, well, you know, another aspect that's important to mention is that there are genetic changes that occur in the genome. The evolutionists call mutations, but they're not mutations. They're actually done by machinery that is splicing and dicing and moving sections of the genome around. And so this happens during development in the embryo and in other processes in neurological cell development. And so actually there's mechanisms in the genome to move stuff around, to slice and dice and move stuff around. And those aren't mutations. Evolutionists originally called those mutations, but those are engineered and designed features to actually reprogram the DNA.
So cool. And shout out, for your articles as well that you've written in Acts and Facts about how the genome was designed and can splice and dice that right. way, just for our listeners who might be interested as well. But you mentioned earlier that there are harmful mutations, of course. Mm-hmm. And I know for me, when I think of mutations, I typically think of the really bad mutations. But is there such a thing as a neutral mutation, as a mutation that maybe wouldn't have any effect whatsoever?
Yeah, there probably are some neutral mutations that have affected regions of the genome that aren't necessarily as critical as far as exons and protein coding genes. They will tolerate a little variability. But, you know, I don't think that anyone has actually ever figured out the percentage of neutral mutations versus harmful mutations. I don't know that that has ever actually been accurately, you know, figured out.
Interesting. And so today in this episode, we're, of course, as we've covered, talking about mutations, but specifically with the concept of genetic entropy. So what does that mean in terms of mutations and how they're affecting people and organisms over time?
Right. So what's interesting is that a creation scientist who was a university professor at Cornell, John Sanford, he was a geneticist there, he developed a computer program where he took all of the evolutionary presuppositions, mutation, natural selection. Of course, we don't believe natural selection is a real mechanism or a real thing. But he actually just said, okay, evolutionist, I'll give you all of the aspects of your paradigm. The result of that was that the buildup of mutations in the genome should have basically ended up just destroying the human race, using evolutionary presuppositions.
Wow. So if natural selection isn't actually removing these mutations, as evolutionists say, what does this ultimately mean for creatures? I mean, what happens once too many of these genetic errors
right.
build up?
Well, the fact of the matter is that we are building up mutations since the original creation, since Adam and Eve were first created. And so we see that in the decline of lifespans of people in the Bible. So before the flood, people were living to great ages, you know, up to 800 years or so. And if you graph that out, you can see that the lifespans of people dropped drastically after the flood. Progressive, but and now, of course, people only live to be maybe 70 to 80 years old, you know. You're doing good if you live into your 90s now. So there has been a buildup of mutations, and we could realistically call that genetic entropy. But when you look at that data, it only gives you a time scale of about 6,000 years to creation, if you use empirical methods to actually look at it in a realistic way.
Wow, which again points directly to
right.
the Bible's account of history. So theoretically speaking, how long would it take for humanity to go extinct at this rate of mutation buildup?
You know, that's hard to say. Some evolutionists have made the claims that they're really surprised that we're not extinct already.
Wow.
just because of the rate that mutations occur in the human genome. Mm. They're actually surprised that we're still alive.
Wow. So that, it sounds like, presents the main dilemma with genetic entropy in the old earth creationism or evolutionary worldview.
Exactly. It's a huge dilemma. You know, why are we still here? If the first humans didn't come out of Africa until 100,000 to 200,000 years ago, why are we still here with the rate of mutations that occur, you know, per generation?
So is there a chance, because you mentioned there could be possibly some neutral mutations, but what about beneficial mutations? Could those be potentially counteracting this process?
No, you know, I can't think of any beneficial mutation. One that's been cited is sickle cell anemia. And so that creates this weird-shaped blood cell that the malaria parasite can't attack. Well, it's also a hindrance to normal daily living. If you don't have malaria, it inhibits the oxygen uptake in your system. So it's not a helpful mutation. Yeah, it would be if you've got malaria, but but in normal life, it's not helpful. Mm. I really can't think of any mutation that would be beneficial. Now, there are some mutations, as I mentioned before, they're not really mutations. They're just basically systems in the genome that have moved the DNA around to create different, you know, traits for the cell and even for the organism. But those aren't mutations. Those are designed modifications to the genome made by machinery that was designed to do that. And this machinery knows exactly what it's doing. And so those aren't really mutations. But really, I can't think of a beneficial mutation I could give you as an answer.
Wow. So in short, if, let's say, evolutionists are right, we came out of Africa hundreds of thousands of years ago. And I say this, you know, theoretically speaking, we know the truth. But let's say they're right. There's not a way for them to reconcile this genetic entropy with their worldview. So, you know, it's so interesting because even what you talked about with beneficial mutations just now, there's nothing that could potentially stop that process. How are they able to address that from their standpoint?
You know, evolutionists have a worldview, and I call it a religion because I worked at a major university. I worked at Clemson University as a faculty member in genetics and biochemistry for about 10 years. And evolution was literally like a religion to these people. And many of these researchers at universities are so compartmentalized in their own little world. You know, they might study some sort of a pathway, biochemical pathway, or an enzyme or something like that. They're kind of in a box. And they figure, oh, all these other people will figure out evolution. I don't need to figure it out for myself. I just believe what I'm told. And so that's the one thing that I saw working in academia, is that people were very compartmentalized. And so they had this evolutionary worldview, but a lot of them, you know, didn't really know, you know, the problems with it. They weren't aware of all the major problems that are, you know, are in evolution from many aspects, from the fossil record to genetics, to the geological column, and, you know, being laid down in the flood. They're ignorant of all the things that we take for granted in creation science that we know.
Yeah, absolutely. They're so blinded to the truth. And, you know,
well, a lot of them, you know, never really have heard the truth.
Wow. And that just makes ICR's mission all the more important to
proclaim
this scientific evidence that we find. And, you know, going through the idea of genetic entropy with you and talking about it, you know, it sounds kind of sad, you know, thinking about how we're, you know, declining with the amount of mutations we're building up, and as various creatures are, you know, getting more and more of these mutations.
Yeah.
But I just think it's so important to drive home the point a little bit what we talked about earlier, of this was not God's original intent, and this started with the fall. And so that's something that I think is really key to know as we discuss.
Yeah, that's key. Actually, that's key. You know, when Adam and Eve sinned, you know, the earth came under a curse, creation came under a curse. You know, why do we have mutations anyways? You know, why do we have death, sickness, and disease? And it all goes back to that. And so, yeah, things are not evolving and getting better in our DNA. They're actually heading in the other direction.
Yeah. Contrary to evolutionary and popular belief.
Right.
So as you know, we're talking about the failures of old earth creationism. And so most old earth creationists would deny upward evolution as we think of it.
Right.
But they still have that idea of long ages built into their worldview.
Mm-hmm.
As far as, you know, humans have been around for hundreds of thousands of years. And so that presents a major issue with the evidence that you've been giving of thousand-year-old genetics.
Right. I don't know that old earth creationists who don't believe in upward evolution. In fact, the theologian Wayne Grudem actually published this thick volume debunking evolution. And he would be in the camp of, I say, Hugh Ross. He believes in, you know, the evolutionary ages for the age of the earth, but yet they reject evolution. But the problem is they don't engage with creationists much on all the points that we've brought out in genetics, in geology, in these certain fields. So, yeah, I don't know. That's a difficult question to answer. So I don't really know quite what to say about that. I will say I had an experience recently. Back in March, I was at the University of Missouri, and I gave a number of talks on campus to professors, including professors that were old Earth creationists, and I presented a lot of data to these people, as well as all the students. And I never really got much of a response back on all of the arguments I was putting out there. You know, they kept coming back at me with all, you know, well, I just believe this. And they didn't even interact with the stuff I was saying. So either they don't know about it or they just don't want to interact with it. They just want to maintain their belief that the earth is very old. I think a lot of it's just peer pressure. They just want to look scientific. They want to look good in front of all their peers. Mm-hmm. And which is unfortunate because a lot of theologians have compromised wanting to look reasonable, wanting to look good in front of all their evolutionary peers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it can feel very isolating to go against the mainstream arguments. And so it's hard for us as Christians to sometimes stand firm in the truth, even when we have all the evidence that very clearly points to biblical accuracy, which, you know, the Bible is authoritative on its own, but yet it's still so hard for us to be able to swim upstream, I guess you could say, against these conventional arguments. Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting too, just thinking about old Earth creationists, very, you know, some of how they interpret the evidence or, you know, their worldview. But thinking about like the fossil record and, you know, if they truly believe these rock layers and fossils were formed over millions of years before the fall, that also presents a death before sin problem.
Exactly.
And that causes major theological issues as well.
Right. Well, why do we have fossils anyways? Why are there billions of dead buried things all over the earth? And normally when a creature dies, it decomposes very quickly. It doesn't become a fossil. So you have to have a massive flood full of sediments to bury these things quickly and then create fossils. But biologically speaking, there are no undisputed transitional forms in the fossil record. Creatures appear suddenly, and on top of that, they stay the same. So they might show up again later in the fossil record, or they might still be alive today, and they look exactly the same. We don't see any evolution going on. So we see sudden appearance, and we see what is called stasis. They stay the same.
It's like God designed them that way from the beginning,
right,
or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the problems with mutations in the genome, too, and this whole idea of neutral mutations, is that now we know basically the entire genome is transcribed into RNA from end to end. And it is almost 100% totally functional. And so scientists are now discovering that mutations in areas outside protein coding genes are causing heart disease, cancer, all sorts of problems. And it turns out that there's over three times as many what is called long non-coding RNA genes than there are protein coding genes. So these genes have the same structure as protein coding genes. They have the same kind of regulatory mechanisms, they have the same exon, intron structure in them, but they code for RNAs that do other things. So some of these RNAs stay in the nucleus, some go in the cytoplasm, some are even exported out of the cell in exosomes and sent to other parts of the body. So the problem that we have now for evolutionists is that almost the entire genome is completely functional and doing something. And so you can't mess up very much of it if almost the entire thing is doing something important, because it will lead to all kinds of diseases and problems, you know, that are medically important.
Mm. So hypothetically, what happens if too many mutations build up over time in a population?
Well, hypothetically, if you have too many mutations, you know, the population will theoretically should go extinct, because you can only tolerate so many mutations in the genome before the organism, you know, becomes totally inviable. I mean, it can't live. And so we haven't reached that point, obviously, because the Earth is 6,000 years old. And so theoretically, you know, an old Earth isn't even logically possible with the amount of mutations that are developing, especially in humans, as I mentioned. About 75 to 150 mutations per generation. That was an estimate, some estimates that have been given in the past. I don't know how accurate those are, but if that's the case, humanity cannot be more than about 6,000 years old.
Wow. And that poses, of course, goes with our topic, a huge problem for old earth creationists, evolutionists, right. uniformitarians who say, no, we evolved, you know, over hundreds of thousands of years, or even old earth creationists who say we didn't evolve, but still have long ages inserted right. in there somewhere.
Right.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Tompkins, this has been such an informative podcast. I know I've learned a lot. I'm sure our listeners have too. As we wrap up, do you have any final thoughts about things that we didn't cover?
No, I do have an article that I published that's on our website that was in Acts and Facts, our magazine. And so it's called Genetic Clocks Verify a Recent Creation. So this article has a lot of the material that I've talked about today in it. So you can get that to kind of refresh what we talked about here.
That's awesome. Yeah, I encourage all of our listeners and viewers to check it out. Dr. Tompkins has a lot of amazing articles in Acts and Facts and on our website. So you can find those on icr.org. But I just want to thank you so much for coming in and just sitting with me on the podcast. You know, this is a hard topic to talk about because, you know, it does sound pretty distressing, or perhaps distressing, as we're, you know, talking about our genes and the mutations building up. But there is ultimately a message of hope for those of us who believe in Jesus as our creator and savior. And so I just want to thank you for coming on the podcast today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me here.
Of course. To all of our listeners and viewers, thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode of the Creation Podcast. If you like this episode, we encourage you to like, subscribe, and share this podcast with your friends and family. So that way we can get the creation message out to as many people as possible. If you would like to receive the Creation Podcast a week early, or our monthly podcast, creation.live, 2 weeks early, you can click the link in the description to become a member on YouTube or Patreon. Thank you again for watching, and we'll see you next time.